WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek, Gary, and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 617-627-3800 is the telephone number you want to call. 617-627-3800. Write those numbers down. Dial. Be a part of the show. We love hearing from our listeners.
Yeah.
And you want to talk to somebody. It is the dead of winter, Lisa.
I know.
This is the dead of winter.
Many people get more facial hair. I don't even know who I'm looking at across.
Oh, I got rid of the beard. Yeah, the beard's gone because the season is over. We don't even have football to get us through the dead of winter.
Knowing that we were going to have 50 degree weather next week?
No, I shaved knowing that the Patriots lost on Sunday because we have no O-line.
That thing.
And because Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware can single-handedly annihilate
our
a professional
beasts,
football team.
Yes. Now, there's many times on this show, Derek, where you have a premonition. You look into your crystal ball and maybe say what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I hate to say you were right.
Yeah. I hate to say I was right, too.
You said we didn't want to go to Denver.
And
Manning was going to. Actually, at this time, Manning wasn't playing. So you were just saying straight out, don't want to go to Denver. That's going to be a problem. They will stop us. And look what happened. We are not going to the Super Bowl.
I said all the way back in December that we did not want to go to Denver. Mm-hmm. And here we are. You know, this was pretty much what I expected. This is what history told us was going to happen. We did come within one play of winning the game.
That was probably the most intense 30 seconds we've seen all year.
So credit where credit is due. It was a good game. It was not a blowout, despite the fact that Tom Brady was on his back for the entire game.
I went to the mall on Monday, and you know all the sports stores have just overloaded with Patriots.
Yeah.
Just everybody looked
50%
sad.
50% off.
Yeah, everybody just looked so sad. Well, no.
Yeah.
Well, everybody can get on the Bruins bandwagon now.
Yeah, they're not good either. So,
also true.
I watched some of that the other
mediocre
night.
Mediocre at best.
I watched some of that last night, I think. And they just kept scoring goals on Rask. What's up with that guy?
Yeah, they need to remember there are three periods to a game.
Torrey Krug was getting his ass kicked in a fight. I'm like, what? This isn't the Bruins?
No.
Well, we win the fights.
They don't have an enforcer on the team.
No, they don't. And they need
That's
one.
The problem.
They desperately, because Torrey Krug is a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And enforcer is not one of them.
See, that's
not part of his skill set.
I miss Thornton.
Yeah. Joe Thornton was good for going out there and mixing things up.
Mm.
Where is the Joe Thornton? We need him back.
Sean Thornton.
Yeah. Sean Thornton.
He's down in Florida.
Where did he? Yeah.
In the warmer weather.
Yeah.
Probably better
Tyler
than
Sagan.
Boston.
We could use him back too.
Mm. Well, he's in Texas.
Notice, on the number one team in the NHL, who knew? Who knew that a great scoring power forward would help you have the best team in the NHL?
Yeah. Just who cares? You dance on tables.
So he goes out and parties a little bit. Give me a break. Other than the fact that the Bruins make horrible, horrible personnel decisions, what else did we learn this week, Lisa?
Well, today in local news, we learned the MBTA has quite the payroll. Nearly 3 in every 10 MBTA employees have made $100,000 or more during the 2015 year, according to new figures provided by the agency. A total of 1,884, or roughly 29.2%, of the 4,451 T workers who were employed by the agency as of December 31st made more than $100,000 during 2015. In addition to regular pay, many MBTA employees collected significant overtime pay. Many also received back pay and retroactive pay raises. Now, there is the key to the story, because many of these workers have, say, a $70,000-$80,000 salary a year. This is when you start getting into problems, because in this study, well, analyzing the paperwork, significant overtime pay. That is one huge problem. Now, the agency is actually coming out and saying absenteeism has driven up the cost because workers were scheduled to not work overtime. They have to make up for everybody that's either calling in sick or taking a significant amount of time off.
Right.
Because they let that happen. Now, where I come from, if you don't have a good excuse why you're not going to be at work, whether it be sick for a couple days, you have a funeral to attend, a sick child, these people are calling out of work a lot.
Well, you should get a union job. where there are no consequences for taking 40 days a year off. And what did I see today? That their sick days are counted toward their pension?
Mm-hmm. And as we know, yeah, they have they're pretty sweet pension.
Yeah.
It's 3.65.
Yeah, you get a match of $3.65 for every dollar you put into the pension. Gee, I wonder why the T isn't running this week.
Mm-hmm. Now, the pay data also showed highest paid employee, a maintenance worker. He made $327,636.
How many hours did he work? Because that's all overtime.
It didn't go with it. Now, his regular salary annual, $84,000.
Is he the one guy that keeps all the trains running?
So, there's actually two guys.
Oh, there's two guys?
That are in the $300,000 bracket. So, we're talking
about... What's the other guy in that bracket doing? Same thing, maintenance?
$280,000 just in overtime.
Yeah.
Is that grossly skewed, or is it me?
No,
you're getting $280,000.
I suspect
the city of Boston, the MBTA, we're allowing this to happen.
I suspect there is a rule in any organization that there is one person there who actually cares and knows what they're doing. And if he's that guy, if he's the only one that's keeping the trains running, pay him.
Earning it. Yeah.
Pay the man. If he wants $500,000 a year, pay the man. He is the only thing standing between the MBTA and complete failure.
But you know what? And we talk about it so much on the show because the T doesn't run.
No.
And the problem is when you have significant problems like this, you have the MBTA in so much debt to the fact that we're talking about not even continuing with the Green Line extension.
Yeah.
Then we find out this, where it is grossly overpaying or overcompensating workers for overtime hours when they can just be firing the people that decide to not show up for work.
And no, they can't because they're in a union.
Contract.
Right.
Well, something needs to change.
Collective bargaining. Well, this is where...
That's a problem.
I think it behooves the unions in the MBTA to take a step back and ask themselves, how much longer are you going to be riding this? How much longer does the, and I hate to use the phrase gravy train, but, you know, how much longer do you get to ride the gravy train before it either gets shut down or it gets privatized and you're all out of work?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we're going to continually see this the entire winter because, I mean, we got, a dusting and you already have red lines shut down.
Slippery rail, Lisa. Slippery rail.
All those pesky
There was leaves. A snowflake on
I
the
mean,
tracks.
The fact that you have the area around Quincy Center, North Quincy, does not operate. I'm going to say 75% of the time. It's being rerouted from JFK on maybe a few buses here and there. This is a problem. We've seen it every single
year.
Can
we get somebody from Europe from
Why
one of those...
Why is the money not going to the right places?
Can we get someone from one of those Alpine nations where they have avalanches, yet the trains still run to come over here and fix this?
And don't get me wrong, I'm not taking away from the people that actually did earn their pay. They're just working the system. If I knew that I was getting that much significantly more in my paycheck, I would be working day and night.
Yeah, this guy's...
Sleep? What? Who needs that?
Yeah, this guy's making bank. It's like, I'll sleep when I retire.
That's right.
You know? And I mean... But
I started a job with $87,000. Now I'm walking out with $320,000.
But it's like I say...
Sounds good.
I'm not going to come down on this guy. It's like I say, if he's the one guy in the organization that actually cares and knows what he's doing, thank God we have him.
No, like they say, can't hate the player, hate the game.
Yeah.
It's a situation. Can't hate the worker. You have to hate the system of how it's being operated.
This may be the one guy in the MBTA that actually cares about whether or not the trains run. Everybody else is like, I can't get another day of broken trains. I just can't get out of bed. You know, Larry will take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Larry's like laughing all the way to the bank, you know?
Taking a long vacation.
I'll tell you what, Larry can apply all of that to his pension, as far as I'm concerned, because unless Larry was sleeping through those shifts, and I doubt he was, Larry's probably one of the few guys in there actually doing some work. So, let's hear it for him. And let's get some stuff fixed over at the MBTA. Union guys, think about what you're doing. Doesn't last forever. In national news, we learned that the Sagebrush Rebellion has claimed a victim. Lavoy Finicum, a spokesman for the group that has occupied the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge in Oregon since January 2nd, was shot and killed by law enforcement during a traffic stop on Tuesday. Ryan Bundy, the brother of occupation leader Ammon Bundy, was wounded and released from the hospital, then arrested along with five other members of the group. The FBI and Oregon State Police have not released any details about the incident, but media noted that Finicum had previously stated that he had, quote, no intention of spending any of my days in a concrete box, end quote.
Now, from where we were in the situation of them being held up in the wildlife sanctuary, not bothering anybody, and then they had come out and said, we're not going to use our arms if you don't use them. It's peaceful protests. Now, from what we're understanding, many of these members have gone into town, causing some sort of disruptions. And then it sparked into a situation like we have here, where you have some sort of standoff after a traffic, just a routine traffic stop, and somebody shot.
Well, it's not a routine traffic stop, because this has been the government's tactic for dealing with these guys, is they've been leaving the bird sanctuary that they're all camped out at to go appear at events in different places. Mm-hmm. And so what they've been doing for the last week or so is picking them off one by one. It's like, one of them goes out. The first one that they got was the idiot that drove out in one of the government's vehicles. All right, he took one of the government's vehicles into town to get groceries, and they were like, sir, you stole a government vehicle. You're coming with us. And then they started, you know, they'd find out when these guys were leaving, and then they'd pull them over to the side of the road and be like, you're the guys up there. You're coming with us. Mm-hmm. We assume that's what happened in this case. I want to know why no details have been released about this when one American citizen is dead and another one is hospitalized.
Because, Derek, that doesn't fit the agenda of what media pushes, what we want to have reported.
If this were a black American who had been shot
completely
by law enforcement,
different story.
We would have a complete accounting from multiple witnesses. There are five people who were arrested.
And I'm not even talking about if this was a black man in downtown Baltimore. I'm talking about in this group, if there was a black man.
There's no black man in this group.
But you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, but I'm...
Because race plays a huge, huge role in this situation.
But, no, race plays a huge role in the media agenda and narrative.
Yes.
Okay? This...
Intelligent people understand what is actually going on here. But exactly like you just said, this is the role, or this is what is portrayed by the media. They want this agenda to be put out.
And the problem with this is not to diminish the lives of anyone else who's been lost, okay? Every person who's killed by law enforcement is valuable, and we shouldn't be killing anyone. But these are people who are involved in a standoff with the United States government. The stakes are a little bit higher here. And again, I'm not saying Freddie Gray's death is not important. I'm not saying Trayvon Martin's death is not important. I'm not saying any of that. I'm saying that those individuals were not involved in a standoff with the U.S. government. These individuals were. And the public should be demanding to know what happened in this traffic stop. Because all we have right now is Ammon Bundy, who's come out and said he was complying with the mm-hmm. police at the time that he was shot. Well, the FBI is not shooting people without a reason. The state police are not shooting people without a reason.
And I mean, this man has also had no other any bouts with violence with anybody else in the government workers.
The excuse that you're going to be given, by the way,
they said that he was charging, which I mean, this isn't a large man. We're talking about a smaller, not feeble, but I mean, not anybody intimidating by any means. So at what point did you have to get to be like, you know what, I need to take him down, I need to shoot him?
There was apparently more than one law enforcement vehicle involved in pulling these guys over, too. That's one of the few details that anyone's been able to get out of
this. Because this was a large group. We're talking about 10 people here.
Right. So, you know, if you got one guy charging at a bunch of cops, like, why is anybody shooting in that situation?
Mm-hmm. But these people have been continually berated by the government. These are people that, and, you know, we're originally talking about, who are the father-son that this all happened from? What were their names?
Oh, the ranchers. They're in jail. No one even cares about them anymore. This is about the Bundys now.
And this is how it somewhat sparked the national conversation and what was going on.
This goes back before them, too.
Mm-hmm. No, but this has been something that, you know, government is constantly on these people that try to put food on their table and take away land that isn't theirs.
Well,
and the government just decides this group is trying to stand up for what they believe is right.
To be fair, they are on land that was owned by the United States government, that they were granted certain rights to use and in some cases bought. And the government is coming back and changing their mind about it. Set that aside. An American citizen was shot, who was involved in a standoff with the United States government, was shot and killed by law enforcement, possibly including employees of the United States government.
And we don't know anything.
And that is a problem. And the excuse we're going to be given, the argument that's going to be made, is that we can't tell you what happened because we don't want to rile up the guys who are still living at the bird sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want this getting out. We'll tell you someday.
They're saying that there could be a chance that this will spark or ignite some sort of action to be had by these people.
Oh, you should have thought about that before you killed the guy, would be my argument. The American people have a right to know and should know when something like this happens. This is a significant story. This is a significant story that the media keeps brushing off of the front page because they don't want to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is not a simple story for anyone to understand. It doesn't play into any of the clickbait headlines that they've been getting lately. But this is a story that impacts everyone in the United States of America. Because when the government can come in and take your property away, or the government can come in and change the rules about how you use your property without giving you any notice or compensation, we have a problem. That's unconstitutional. And now somebody has died trying to defend their constitutional rights. I, for one, want to know what happened. And I want to know what happened sooner rather than later.
In so many situations, we demand these questions. The media demands these questions.
It is
why so silent now?
It is disappointing to me that other than NBC News, no one's even really talking about this story.
No,
right
if
now.
You watched Fox News, CNN all day, there was maybe 30 seconds covered on this.
Yeah.
Didn't go into much detail. But all day you knew that Donald Trump would not be at the debate tomorrow night.
Donald Trump said
all
something.
All day.
Yeah.
Talked about this. 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Not important.
Wonder why their ratings are going down the toilet. In world news, we learned that Denmark is taking a harder line on immigration. The Danish parliament voted 81-27 with one abstention to allow the state to confiscate valuables from immigrants worth more than 10,000 Danish kroner, the equivalent of $1,400 in U.S. currency. Danish leaders say the confiscations are necessary to provide payment for government services that are provided for free, including health care and education, while critics see the move as a way to discourage immigrants from going to Denmark. Switzerland and Germany have similar laws, but there are no reports of Germany enforcing them with the recent wave of immigrants. So,
what's so interesting about this, typically Denmark's really been looked at as that country that sets a higher standard for human rights. And they were a country that took in, what are they up to, about 20,000 refugees?
Oh, more than that.
200,000?
Yeah,
why am I seeing
over
like two?
It's over 100,000, mm-hmm. I know that.
You know, we're talking about being able to seize somebody's property, whether it be gold on them. If it has any sort of sentimental value, then no, you can't. So a wedding ring, something passed down.
Right.
But morally, you have to look at it as, is this really the most ideal way to treat somebody? Knowing the situation where they're coming from, is that as far as we have to go?
That depends on whether or not you believe the myth. And it's not fully a myth, but to a large extent, we're discovering that it is generally a myth that these people are fleeing war, that these are wartime refugees. Increasingly, what we're hearing from all corners of Europe is that they're not. These are economic migrants. It's the same thing that we have in the United States with everybody from South America coming across the border. You get a small number of people who are coming in because Their hometown has been taken over by drug lords.
No, absolutely.
But then you get a lot of people who are coming in because, hey, I can make a better living there. And you can spot the difference by looking at the makeup of who's coming over. Is it a lot of able-bodied young men who are coming over? Or is it women and children who are coming over? Well, what we're seeing over and over again in Europe is the women and children are nowhere to be found. Mm-hmm. And on the southern border of the United States, where we have people from Syria coming into the United States, they are military age males.
But 100% across the board, no. And Derek, you know I'm one of the first people to, before saying this, we have this connotation, and the media really pushes it in saying, for the majority, Obama was on the State of the some speech talking about these are women and children we're turning away. I understand that, yes, these are men capable of wartime. Why are they not fighting for their country? But there are some people that are fleeing this nation because of war.
That's fine.
You need to be ignorant to believe there isn't some chunk of it.
That's fine.
Are there people that are using this as a parameter to get into countries, whether they have ISIS sympathy or whatnot? Yes, there are many bad apples. But do we get to a point just because there's all these bad people mixed in a larger group saying, we're going to take everything?
The population of Denmark is smaller than the population of Massachusetts. Okay? So imagine that 100,000 Syrians show up in Massachusetts. What are we going to do with them?
Well,
and this is what Denmark is saying. What are we going to do with these people?
Why are you letting in that many people?
They don't have a choice because no one is enforcing the borders over there.
Why is nobody enforcing the borders? That's your question.
Because the European Union basically forbids
that. When you open your door, well, that's something that needs to be looked at. We got to a point where we need to now start taking valuables. No, the bigger thing is, why did you keep your doors open? Why are you not changing?
Denmark didn't.
Why are you not changing policy on that?
Denmark didn't. Germany was the only country that threw its arms open and said, hey, all you immigrants, come on over here.
Well, and look at the state of that country right now.
And we saw how that worked out for them on New Year's Eve. But all of these economic migrants started coming in. And this came from a good place, which is we have a war in Syria. We have a war in Iraq. People are being displaced. Jordan can't take any more of them. So people were coming to Europe. But what you get...
But I mean, how, you know, Europe looks a great place. Look at all the benefits that you get just by going into the country. Sounds very familiar.
The problem...
United States?
The problem that Europe has is these people get to the northern coast of Africa. Okay? Primarily, a lot of them come through Libya. They get on a boat. They land on the shore somewhere in Europe. And then what do you do with them? You can't sink the boat in the ocean and kill them. You can't kill them once they're in Greece. So all you can do is try and herd them along and hope that they go somewhere. No one's come up with a reasonable plan to put them on planes and take them back home, which is what should happen. Mm-hmm. Okay? They should have a center set up on the border in Greece that everybody comes into, and you figure out who they are. Yazidis, welcome. You're being persecuted all over the place. Come on in. Kurds, welcome. Come on in. You're there with your whole family? Come on in. You are an able-bodied young man? Here's a plane ticket. You get seat 11A. You get seat 11B. You get seat 11C. You get seat 12A. We're flying you home tonight. Don't come back here. And that's what Europe is dealing with right now.
But that's what I would rather have happen than start taking possessions of people.
Denmark is...
Because, I mean, that opens the doors for so many...
Yeah, but the problem is...
If you have a government worker that's starting to collect jewelry, they're probably just going to pocket it. How much money are you actually going to see? We're talking about, you know,
the
taking
problem
gold
is,
and selling it at an auction.
They can't pay for this. They got 100,000...
Well, of course not.
100,000 people have shown up on their doorstep. No housing, no clothes, no job, no food.
It's the same thing here in the United States. Look how much money we are hemorrhaging constantly because we have an influx of immigrants, illegal immigrants.
Yeah,
essentially, that's what's going on over there.
But our solution in this country is to print more money to hand to them and to convince them to vote Democrat. That's what we do in the United States. We also have a population of 300 million. So our ability to absorb 10 million people is much higher than Denmark. Denmark's got a population of 5.6 million people. Massachusetts has a population of 6.2 million as of the last census number that I looked at. So they don't have the resources. It's not like the International Monetary Fund is coming in and saying, here's money to help. The UN isn't coming in and saying, here's money to help. All these people show up and Denmark's like, what do? And they're like, take care of them.
It seems like you have every country not working together in the least bit of trying to deal with this. And everybody thinks that theirs is a little bit better or it's some sort of version of it.
Serbia,
but it's not. And nothing's working.
Serbia built a fence. Hungary built a fence. Belgium built a fence. Everybody's putting up fences. Everybody's trying to figure out some way of keeping these people out. Nobody is doing what would stop the problem, which is either putting the military in the water and forcing those boats to turn back, or picking them up and taking the people and dropping them back on the shore in Libya, or getting them all in Greece, which is where a lot of them are coming through.
Because those plane tickets are much more cheaper than...
And deciding who's going to go and who's going to stay.
Well, we're talking about in Denmark where they now want to pass something where you can only stay for 1 year. And, you know, there are chances where you're not going to be reunited with your family. Do you know how difficult it is to actually find these people after a year?
Well, that's the other rule, is you cannot bring any of your family in for 3 years if Denmark accepts you.
Mm-hmm.
So no additional family for 3 years. Basically what they're saying is you can come here, but if you come here, we're going to expect you to pay what you can.
A lot of people are leaving
and you're not
families.
Bringing anyone else.
It's a one for all.
But they're not leaving their families. Because what happens is one person comes in and gets set up, and then the rest of the family shows up. So you start out with one immigrant. Okay, we've found housing and a job for them. And then they call back home. They're like, come on over, everybody. I'm all set. And because a lot of the immigrants who were coming in this past summer were saying, I'm going to Germany. I have family there. I'm going to France. I have family there. I want to get to the United Kingdom. I have family there. Well, how do you have family there if you're born from, if your whole family's from Syria?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's already gotten in.
And it's that easy.
And Europe is basically saying, we can't handle this. And they're right. They can't handle this. No country can handle this. So short of the United Nations or the International Monetary Fund or the European Central Government coming in and kicking up some money to deal with this.
Which you're not.
States are on their own. And so Denmark said, all right.
But that's the big question. Why is that not happening? Why are countries not working together?
Because
you have countries just putting their hands up. And I understand
the
whole concept behind taking people's possessions to acquire some sort of monies to help pay for all this.
Taxation is what it is.
Is it the right way to do it? No. In my opinion, it's not.
Whether it's the right way to do it or not, they don't have an alternative. They do not have an alternative.
When you don't have an alternative, you have to think of something.
You can't think of something. You have 100,000 people here and no way to pay for them.
And if you had every country getting together, demanding...
But they're not doing that. It is every man for himself over there.
I understand.
Every country for itself over there.
Actually changing. That's what needs to happen.
But that's not going to happen. Because the global economy, despite everything that everyone on Wall Street wants you to believe, is a mess. It is in tatters. So when you get a million people showing up in Europe, and they're like, help us, the European governments are sitting around saying, we can't afford this.
Mm-hmm.
How do we pay for this? Are we going to take services away from our own citizens? Because that's what they do in the United States.
But you're also seeing that starting to happen in Germany.
The problem is the populations, Germany's got one of the biggest populations over there, so they've got some ability. But the populations over there will not put up with that. People in Europe live under much more extreme taxation than we do here in the United States. Okay? We lose maybe a third to 40% of our income to taxes. In a lot of these European countries, you lose 60 to 65% of your income to taxes. What you get in exchange for those taxes is health care. You get great infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
You get free education. You get generous social service benefits if you lose your job, free retraining, All kinds of things.
No, and essentially you're going to have significant money taken out of your check every week to provide right. services for other people
and
that are not putting in the system.
And because of this,
it's very, very familiar.
The people who are paying that 65% in taxes expect that those services are going to fellow citizens. They get very upset. Well,
that would be the logical thing.
They get very upset when that money is used to help people in a different country or who have just shown up on their doorstep from a different part of the world. They will not tolerate it the same way that the United States will tolerate it. They will not tolerate foreign cultures the way that the United States tolerates foreign cultures. There is deep nationalism involved in every one of these countries. And this is basically Denmark saying, you know what? We don't want a bunch of Syrians in here. We don't want a bunch of Iraqis in here. We don't want any of these people in here. So what can we do short of putting up a wall to keep them out? And this is their solution. And it's partly grounded in a practical need, but it's also meant to send a message to the immigrants saying, you can come.
But this is what you have to. Yeah, they were saying that it is going to make their country less desirable.
Yeah.
And I'm sure people would give up some of their possessions.
As George Bush would say, mission accomplished.
Well, today in sports, we learned another former NFL player suffered from CTE. Findings revealed post-mortem. Former New York Giants safety Tyler Sash was found to have an extraordinarily high level of CTE when he had died in September at the age of 27, the New York Times reported Tuesday. Sash died from an accidental overdose of painkillers, and his family donated his brain to be studied for chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Representatives from Boston University and Concussion Legacy Foundation notified the Sash family that CTE had been diagnosed in Tyler's brain and that the disease, which only can be confirmed posthumously, had advanced stages rarely seen in somebody his age. Now, he actually was at a stage 2. This is the same exact, so it's rated on a level of 0 to 4. Junior Seau, at the time of his suicide at 43, was at level 2. So we're talking about a 27-year-old that only played in the NFL for 2 seasons.
Yeah.
He was later released post-Super Bowl win because of, Adderall he got because he suffered from ADD. And so that showed up on his drug test, multiple other bouts. This is so incredibly sad. And it's another thing that just reminds us how incredibly significant concussions in everything that's encompassing, not just football. I mean, we've talked about it on the show before and how it kind of goes into other sports, soccer being a major one.
Football
anything
gets,
where you use your head.
Football gets the headlines, but that mm-hmm. is not the extent. It is a problem with soccer players. It is a problem for hockey players. It is a problem for anybody in any sport where there is physical contact or the possibility of a serious head injury.
And we're not talking just about professional sports. It has been analyzed. Is somebody that has died. They found significant numbers with people that just played in high school and college.
Yeah.
I mean, you are constantly having head trauma. Essentially, that's what it is. And, you know, the league seems to be more proactive in recent years compared to others. Are we even at the point close to where we should be? No, because the NFL knows what that would mean.
The league really wants this to go away. The league's solution to this is we're going to fine Danny Amendola for that hit in the Kansas City game a couple weeks ago.
But the NFL knows what it would mean. It would mean the end of the league.
Even though we saw several Patriots get laid out by the same hit in the game on Sunday, yeah, without so much as a flag being thrown.
Mm-hmm. Oh, didn't see it.
Yeah. Oh, what was that? Helmet to helmet? There were a couple of helmet to helmet hits that did not get flagged in that game.
You know, CTE, it has symptoms, you know, basic as impaired judgment, memory loss. Depression is a huge, huge thing. Exactly like I just said, Junior Seau committed suicide. There is many studies that have found a connection between the two.
Yeah.
We also go as far as this causes the pre-stages of dementia.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not talking about just some minor illness. This will kill you. So what you decide and choose as a high school player, as a college player, and continuing to professional career, you run that risk. Recently, we saw a player, I forget who was he on the Seahawks, forget his name. He came out and said, I'm not playing. I understand what could happen to me in the future, and I'm not okay with that. When have you ever seen that?
It's more that you're going to see kids walking away from these games at a younger age, or parents preventing. And we had a bunch of cases around the country where football programs shut down.
Texas. I mean, we're talking about Texas. That is, you know, breeds football players. They shut down towns on the weekend because of a Friday night game. And then these, we hear Pop Warner teams, you can't tackle anymore. It's touch football. And we've had this conversation. Are we going to start seeing changes at the lower level? They are making new technology with the helmets. It's not enough. Because what in soccer? You use your head for the ball. You don't wear a helmet.
The helmet doesn't help. That's the problem. Any situation where your head changes velocity very quickly, your brain is banging around inside your skull.
Mm. Well, how many times do you watch a game and you make an audible sigh or just cringe because of what you hear on the field?
Yeah.
When you can hear two helmets hit up against each other or somebody's head hit up against another player.
Yeah.
Think about how small that sound is and how much that must hurt where you can hear it. It's crazy.
Yeah. The folks at the Concussion Legacy Foundation are doing very, very good and very valuable work. If you are involved in sports, if you have a child who is involved in sports, you really want to pay attention to what they're doing over there. These are very, very smart, well-meaning people. They're trying to fix a problem that we didn't even know we had until a few years ago. And they have been way out in front of this. They're the ones that backed the NFL up against a wall. I know the Will Smith movie is out. Mm-hmm. But these guys had as much to do with it as anybody. You can find them at concussionfoundation.org. And I do, particularly if you are a parent of a child participating in sports, I encourage you to go visit their website.
Watch
and see what they're about and see what they're learning and see what they're recommending.
And there's a great Frontline piece. I believe you can find it either on Netflix or the, what is it, the Hard Truth? Trying to think of the name of it.
It's the one that the NFL pulled out of because they didn't like the direction it was going into. Mm-hmm. And they actually League of Denial.
League of Denial.
They actually
great piece.
They actually talked to Chris Nowinski of the Concussion Legacy Foundation extensively in that and tell a lot of the story of how they gained prominence.
No, after watching that, you will completely change your look on in this situation.
And I've spent time with Chris Nowinski. I've talked to Chris Nowinski. They're sincerely trying to do something good here. And this is not something that you want to be apathetic about. You know, if you take time to only learn about a couple of things this year, make the concussion issue one of the things that you learn about. I don't know how you fix this in the NFL. I don't know that you can fix this in the NFL. Maybe that's just the price you pay. In the same sense that if you become a coal miner, you're going to die of black lung. And you know that when you go into the mines, but that's the job you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's a trade-off we need to make as a society. Because we want fun, athletic, people smashing into each other football. But we also want people to live long and happy lives.
No, and some of these people that go into the league probably can't look into the future. They're blinded by the fame. They're blinded by the money and understanding the repercussions of what will happen to you. It's not, for the majority, it's not what could happen to you. It's what will happen to you.
But the other thing is, this CTE affects different people differently.
Different ways, yes.
Some people, couple concussions, and they got it. Some people can get their heads banged around every single week, and they won't get it. It's like, we don't know why. We just know that it's a possibility, and that there's no way to screen for it.
And also, symptoms are different with everybody.
There's no way to screen for it, no way to tell if somebody's got it, unless you take the brain out of the head, at which point, the person's life is over.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is, you know, it's not like this is an illness that will manifest itself and you're like, oh, I think it's CTE. Even if you know you got it, It's only going to get worse. It's WMFO Medford. I have to say that every so often.
In entertainment news, we learned the future of the Oscars might look a little more diverse. The U.S. Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Science was clarified its plans to revolutionize the Oscars following complaints that the new reforms to the champion diversity at the expense of older white members. On Friday, the Academy announced, quote, a sweeping series of substantive changes following intense criticism over the lack of racial diversity in this year's Oscar nominees. This included a commitment to double the number of women and ethnic minority members in the Academy by 2020. The Academy is introducing a new 10-year limit, meaning that voting privileges will only be available to members who have worked in the past 10 years. Now, we talked about this at length last week and saying, you know, one of the biggest reasons why these movies are not getting nominated, a predominantly black movie, say something like a Straight Outta Compton or what was the Netflix movie that was getting a lot of...
Beast of No Nation.
Mm-hmm, which you said and recommended that everybody see. For the majority, we have, as you're saying, old white members. They're not going out and seeing Straight Outta Compton. So this is one thing that needs to be changed.
But that's not the problem. The problem is they don't see the movies at all. And that's something I... There may be a step toward fixing that here. Because basically what they're saying is, if you're out of the industry for 10 years, you don't get to vote anymore. You can still like come to the banquets and get all the other benefits of being in the Academy, but you don't get to vote anymore.
Now, all these longtime standing members kind of flip the switch and saying, well, these new rules are biased against us.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're
playing the white card.
There was one former studio executive who was a gay Latino who was like, What are you throwing me out for? I'm diverse. I can't vote because I haven't made a movie in 10 years. He's like, this is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think you have to take people away, but you definitely need to add it. And one, first of all, being your sole job, if you are voting for Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress, all you do is go to the movies. You see everything.
Yeah.
Whereas
but they
now,
don't is the problem.
Exactly.
And this is one of the reasons why the technical awards are a little easier to figure out in the Oscars every year than the main categories. The technical awards are only voted on by those branches. So there is a cinematography branch. There is a sound editing branch. There is a special effects branch. There is a writer's branch. And the people who vote in those categories, as a rule, see everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they know what they're voting on. And they sit there and they pass judgment. Any best of, any judgment like that is subjective by nature. But they pass judgment based on their own professional expertise.
Their craft.
They look at what other people are doing and say, you know what, that guy's
so
better than
anybody. The editors...
Yeah,
are doing editing, sound mixing.
That's really, really good over there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the other branches of the Academy who get involved, who get to vote on Best Picture, Actor, Actress, and all this other stuff. And they sit there and they're like, well, I didn't see these movies, so I just checked what my secretary told me.
For the majority.
Or I don't vote in that category because I never see those movies.
These people are seeing movies that are getting the buzz, that are being talked about by critics. Why am I going to go see that movie? Nobody's talking about
right.
it. It's not going to be a shoo-in for a nomination.
Let me ask you a practical question. What is this going to do to get more movies made by black directors? What is this going to do to get more movies made with screenplays by black screenwriters? What is this going to do to get more acting jobs for black actors and actresses? Nothing. Nothing. I explained in depth last week what the problem is. All of the money in Hollywood is controlled by old white guys. Okay? Let me tell you something about old white guys and money. When they have money, they have two rules. Number one, don't lose it. Number two, make more. So they want projects that will make them more money without risking the money they already have.
That's the biggest thing. Why are you going to take a risk when you have a sure thing?
And this is where Jada Pinkett Smith was correct. go find some investors, go make your own movies. We got this movie that just got picked up by Sony at Sundance for $17.8 million about a slave rebellion, which has black actors and actresses in it and may be an awards contender. It took the director 7 years to make the movie because everyone in Hollywood said no. No.
Pass.
We don't want that. Have you got a comedy?
Mm-hmm.
All right, I noticed 50 Shades of Black is coming out this weekend.
You had used the example. It's like one of the Wayans brothers coming in and saying, you know what, I'm good with the scary movie series. Let's do a slave epic.
Yeah, goodbye.
What?
Oh, they might get a slave epic. But if they walked in and they're like, we want to do a story about some black bankers, they're going to be like, goodbye.
Yeah.
Don't care. Find somebody else to make that movie. Does it? We ran the numbers and it doesn't work.
Well, we have maybe a couple, Spike Lee being one, that could probably do most.
Spike Lee is one of the few who can do pretty much anything he wants because he's got a built-in audience at this point. You put Spike Lee's name on a motion picture, they know it's going to make X million dollars. So they give him a budget based on that. I can't think of another black director who is in that position in Hollywood right now. Steve McQueen, maybe, because 10 Years a Slave was a big hit, but I haven't seen another Steve McQueen movie since then.
And how long did it take for that movie to get made?
Yeah.
Until Brad Pitt came on as a producer?
Oh, that was ultimately, that's the deciding factor in that, is Brad Pitt gets involved.
His name's on it, let's go.
I'll put money into this, and can you give me a part in the film? It's like, yeah, here you go, Brad.
Sure.
But that's what you need. You need to get, you can change the makeup of the Academy all day long. If there are no awards-worthy movies starring people of color, there aren't going to be any nominees.
Can't just nominate it to make it equal.
Exactly. You can make the Academy diverse all day long. If every movie that comes out that's an awards movie is all white people, what's going to get nominated? You either nominate nothing or you nominate films that don't deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know what all of this adds up to. And I do think it might help with the voting process a little bit, but I still maintain if you want to solve this, let the branches continue voting on the nominations. But for the big awards, take everybody out of it. You have a group of people whose job it is to go see every single movie, and all they are paid for is to go see every movie and come up with a list of nominees. That's it. Hire some people out of the Academy if you want to. You got all these people who are sitting around not making movies anymore. Go hire some of them to do it. Or you pick 100 people at random every year. You have to go see every movie.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're kicked out of the Academy.
It's been like this for so long.
Yeah.
And they don't want to change it.
It's not
what they're. You need to start having very, very high profile black actors, producers, directors starting to come to, you know, projecting their feelings and talking about protesting because of the lack of diversity.
You could have an all-black Academy. Go find me other than Idris Elba and maybe Will Smith.
It's very simple if you know how.
Go find me the awards caliber movies from last year. Go find them. There were two, Straight Outta Compton and Creed. So, all right, maybe you got a couple of nominees out of that.
So, two out of how many?
So, you got potentially two best actors, a best actress, a best director, a couple of best pictures. And then, what else have you got?
But do you get to a point where you have to automatically nominate the actor in it? Because we need to fill the quota?
Well, you can't.
Because we're going to look like we're racist?
You can't do that either.
That's what I'm saying, and what your point makes so much more sense on the larger scale in saying you need more movies, you need more people coming out and creating these movies that are centered around either black actors, a storyline.
The one thing that you can really ding the Academy on for this one is Idris Elba, because SAG nominated him for Best Actor, BAFTA nominated him for Best Actor. There were critics.
That was for Creed.
No, for Beasts of No Nation. There were
Oscars is so weird about
there were critics
Netflix
groups that were like
facts.
Idris Elba, Idris Elba, Idris Elba, and the Academy's sitting there and they're like, well, that's not a movie. Nobody saw the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you're the Weinsteins throwing piles of money behind promoting these movies, getting those DVD screeners out and doing all the rest of that, nobody's even going to see the film. No one even knows it's out there. So you've got to fix the nomination process. And you don't do that strictly through diversity. You've also got to fix the studio process. And then you got to get people to go see the damn films. You do those three things, and maybe we'll have a better system. Right now, as it is, forget it. It's a mess. And this is a Band-Aid on a mess. You put Band-Aids on cancer all day long. It does not cure the cancer.
Well, you'll hear plenty of Oscar talk during our Oscar show.
I know. We're not even there yet. The shorts are screening starting this weekend, by the way.
Salem.
In technology news, not just in Salem, we learned that spying has a search engine. Shodan has been around since 2009, but thanks to some new easy-to-use features, it now allows nearly anyone to hack your in-home surveillance devices, so if you haven't set a strong password, anyone can spy on you. For just $49 a month, users can get access to unsecured and poorly secured online devices, including security cameras and heart monitors, and in some cases, take control of them to get a better view.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes.
And reassuring.
Yeah.
So,
by the way, changing the password does not mean, oh, I set the password at 12345.
I was going to say, wasn't there a study that just came out again?
Yes.
That the most popular passwords are password and 12345, yeah. 6.
So if somebody thinks you've got an interesting home security camera.
They could be watching you.
Yeah.
And watching your family.
Yeah. They're going to try those passwords that everybody uses and probably get into it. And with some of these cameras,
I was going to say, the state of our hacking abilities, I'm sure it's very, very simple for some of these people to do this.
Yeah.
That's it. It's not a good
thing. There's a search engine now. $49 a month. And you can just get live feeds of people doing whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I assume it's a great place to find amateur porn. And that there's mountains of amateur porn out there every single night.
And creepy pedophiles.
Oh, yeah. You can probably find plenty of that, too. So whatever you're into, we have a search engine for that. Isn't that good?
Mm.
Isn't that? Aren't you excited?
Google's not backing that.
Live in this wonderful time that we live in now, Lisa, where everybody can just get at your...
Yeah. I'm not going to have the cameras in the house. It's weird. It's like when they talk about laptops, you should never leave them open. Because hackers, if you're hooked up to the internet, they can pull up your webcam.
They haven't said if you can get into people's Xbox Kinects, but I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that you can. I mean, the kid that wrote this search engine did it basically so that people could, like, track down devices that are connected to the internet without this in mind. But now that we live in...
And then
in
all
the,
of a sudden popped up.
Yeah.
No.
Now that we live in the Internet of Things...
Live streaming video in somebody's bedroom.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Now that we live in the Internet of Things, if you've got cameras anywhere in your house, expect that you're on the internet.
No one. There's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Well, the stormy weather didn't quite come through for us last weekend.
It's not that cold.
Which was a good thing. It's actually been rather nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday was beautiful. Today, not so bad. But bad news. Temperature's going to go down a little bit, kids. Tonight, depending on where you are, if you're downtown, it'll be in the mid-20s. If you're on those colder suburbs, you can expect temperatures in the teens as winter makes a second stand, I guess. Tomorrow, we will warm up into the lower 40s, temperatures in the lower 30s tomorrow night. Friday, we're going to be brushed by an ocean storm.
Mm.
That could bring some
small, though, right?
That could bring some snow showers, particularly in coastal areas. No accumulation is expected from this. Temperatures during the day on Friday, again, up around 40. We fall back below freezing just a bit Friday night. Saturday, pretty decent winter day, partly cloudy. High of about 40. Temperatures falling to around freezing Saturday night. And then on Sunday, we could be back up around 50 degrees. So that's your winter day this weekend. And if you like that, next week could be going even higher.
Ooh.
Temperatures in the 50s.
I'm holding out for those freak days in March that we sometimes get that go up to the 80s.
Yeah,
happening.
We might get those early this year. So thank you, El Nino, You're making life miserable in the rest of the country, but you know what? Around here, it's a nice, calm, relaxing winter.
Snowless.
I busted out the new snowblower for the first time on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Was that Sunday? Was when we were cleaning up from the snow, and they got the controls reversed on it. So there's one less flower pot in the yard.
I'm telling you, every year my birthday is cursed. We always get significant amount of snow.
Yeah. That wasn't, all things considered, it wasn't a bad one. If you were out on Saturday night, it all just sort of came down at once. So driving was,
well, that's the thing. We were at work and saying, weren't we only supposed to get 1, 2, 3 inches?
Yeah.
And then you look out and you're like, yeah, that looks like 6.
Yeah.
Not 2.
It showed up when we, yeah, it showed up. Came down quick and then left quick. So by 10 o'clock Saturday night, it was pretty much done. When we come back after a brief break, Stump the Co-Host right here on WMFO Medford. Claudine Longe.
Hmm?
She shot a guy.
Snow.
I'm going to the hardware store.
Oh, will you pick up 800 lumen bulbs?
800 more flowers? The neighbors will think we're wacky.
Not flower bulbs, light bulbs.
Come on, Dad. Lumens tell you how bright the bulb is. We can replace our 60-watt bulbs with energy-saving bulbs that give off about 800 lumens.
So, we'll save money.
Right.
Got it. 800 lumens and more savings.
Lumens, the new way to shop for light. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Garrett and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock. 617-627-3800 is the number. And it is Stump the co-host.
Where we just try to prove that we're better than one another.
But also being
informative.
As those who follow me on Facebook know, Lisa Nichols has completely...
I have a list of songs.
Punted her obligations.
That I will show you at the bar.
With a
I
song.
I didn't go to the bar last week. I couldn't show
for
you.
For this? So we get this. I picked something this week, and this is our new Stump the co-host music.
Yeah, I have a couple songs, but I think the one that you like...